Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
Your conscious mind knows disco is dead. But your unconscious mind is already imagining the gruesome, gory details of how it's going to slash open EDM's throat. You're now tuned in to your favorite late-night talk show for the shamelessly fringe. It's Open Loops with Greg Mornstein. Conversations that bend. Wah-ho-ho, wah-ha-ha, wah-hee-hee, Wakanda. Hey, everybody. Welcome, 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 welcome. Greg Mornstein here, curator of experience, chief looper, consciousness disruptor, and cultural hypnotist. Welcome to Open Loops, a show where we challenge your existing belief systems by sharing radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind and allow you to step into the highest version of yourself. Very recently, I've been told that the topics of this show are sometimes not the things I should talk about when I first meet people. A friend of mine, new friend of mine, this woman who I just met randomly, I became very friendly with, just very, very regular, nothing romantic, nothing like that. But she's like, Greg, you go on dates, you should not talk about UFOs, you meet people, you shouldn't talk about it with your friends. And I'm here to say, what kind of a friend are you? Because most of our conversation is going to be talking about how I shouldn't be talking about UFOs. And if that's not talking about UFOs, yes, you're listening to the show that I shouldn't talk about with others. That's what we're here for. The paranormal, the conspiratorial, the secretive, the mysterious. When everybody else is talking about social justice and economic ruin and the world going to crap, we're talking about the off-world and going to glory. Yes, what a fun time it is in October, isn't it? I do love the spookiness. I'm not sure that things can get any less scary than the threat of nuclear invasion, but then on the flip side, once there's nuclear stuff getting involved, that means more UFOs show up, so yeah, we go back and forth on all that. Wanted to take a breather in this October and do kind of a different style episode. Haven't done one of these in a while. Watching that show, The Vow, this is a great example of loopiness folding on loopiness, because I'm not sure any of you have seen that show, but I want to talk a little bit about emotional manipulation and applied manipulation in general and the tactics of manipulation and cult-like behavior, because I am still struggling with why I am so fascinated by Keith Raniere, the founder of Executive Success Programs and the Nixium cult. Took place upstate New York. I talked about it very early on in the show because that's when the HBO show was on. But for those that don't know, there was a, well, personal development organization created by this guy, Keith Raniere, supposedly one of the smartest men in the world, though no one really knows why. And he was just charismatic. People loved hearing him. The flip side of the story is, though, as this program grew and grew, and apparently 17,000 people took this man's personal development trainings all over the world, at least as long as he was in business, there also was a secretive group really focused around women and sexual acts with Keith, the head of the cult. So while this guy was on the surface doing some Tony Robbins-like work, digging into people's values, transforming people, helping them become better people, behind the scenes, he was acting like Tony Robbins, potential creeper. Tony Robbins, well, allegedly creeper. But no, in this case, Keith Raniere was actually having this program called DOS, which involved women branding themselves with Keith's name on their bodies and performing sexual acts for collateral information about their lives, a compromising photo, family secrets. And there was this tight, almost like a pyramid scheme of these women recruiting other women to bring them in. Part of it was having sex with this guy, Keith Vanguard, the prefect, or he wasn't the prefect, this woman under him, Nancy, is prefect, he's Vanguard. A lot of things, a lot of psychology in here. I'm not going to be another one of those podcasts and analyze the cult psychology, because there is a lot in there, and I've even thought about doing an episode sometime about rational inquiry, which is one of the methodologies of executive success programs, and just even analyzing the self-improvement work. Like, is the work that Nixium does with people in executive success programs getting people to reintegrate? And I forget what they call it. I know that integration is a word they use. Integration is one of those great nominalizations. For those that need a refresher, nominalization is when you take a verb and make it into a noun in such a way that it's so vague it could mean anything. An integration, oh yes, people always say that in the spirituality community, I'm integrating this knowledge. What does that even mean? In general, there is a correlation between the hypnotic and these abstract terms. I mean, if you were listening at all to Sean Bond last week on the Montauk Redemption episode, that guy is constantly putting you into a trance state simply by talking about these higher level abstract concepts. One could say it's the truth, and the truth is trance inducing because it speaks to a part of your core, a feeling place rather than just a head place. But yes, integration is one of those words. And even as you're listening to me right now and my words are being understood by you through your headphones or speaker and going inside your unconscious mind, you can begin to feel that maybe they're integrating within you in a way that you didn't even know was possible. Great example of the kind of statement a cult leader would make, by the way. Pacing and leading, as we call that. Another hypnotic term, this notion that you're with them, you're meeting someone where they're at, i.e., I literally describe to you what you're doing, listening to my words, but then guiding you gently towards a place that maybe is slightly askew from where you are. In New York City, we used to call it the Aster Tilt. One of my roommates and I back in the day, because in Aster Place, right down by NYU, it kind of breaks off from the grid. There's a bit of a tilt before you get to Third Avenue, and there's a big cube structure that rotates in the center of Astor Place, and we would joke that, oh, you got to factor the Astor tilt into things. It's a slight tilt. You get back to the grid, but it's not perfect. There's a little bit of a tilt there. So, yes, we must say here that whatever Keith Raniere is doing, he's using a lot of broad hypnotic language, and it's very interesting. It's very interesting. Now, season one of The Vow was really kind of a breakdown of what happened before Keith Raniere got arrested. Season two came out the other night, and that kind of takes us to the trial, slightly before the trial, people who are defending him, Keith defending himself, just lots of interesting defenses and other counter arguments, which I'm going to get to in a second. But what I was going to say is, one of the reasons I haven't been able to do an episode about the technology that Nancy Salzman and Keith Raniere teach in Nixium is because of the courts, you can't actually find any of the confidential training materials. In neurolinguistic programming, in NLP courses, which I believe a lot of Nixium and executive success programs, I almost said sex programs, talk about a phonological ambiguity. Look that one up. In a lot of their programs, they confiscated the materials because it was part of the court case, and NLP was, what was I saying? Oh yeah, it's modeled from neurolinguistic programming and Tony Robbins and the best of the self-help stuff. So even though, you know, NLP stuff is out there, they kept all the Nixium stuff under wraps, and then the courts did as well. So, my gosh, if somebody has anything from executive success programs or Nixium and is willing to spill the beans, reach out to me at the Greg Bornstein on Instagram. I'd be curious if you've got it, or you can follow me on Facebook, or write me greg@open-loops.com, greg@open-loops.com. Would love to get my hands on some of that original Nixium training materials, just to even look in to see what they were doing, and does it even make sound sense in light of personal development technology that's out there. We'll review it on the show for you. What I was going to say about season two, though, of The Vow, that I find particularly loopy and interesting, is that after The Vow came out, The Vow season one, that is, I was very, very intrigued by the way they ended it. And I'll tell you this, it ends with you believing that there's a whole nother side to the story from the defendants, from Keith, from Nancy Salzman. And turns out, I saw an interview very soon after The Vow concluded with Nikki Klein, who is Allison Mack's girlfriend, who was part of DOS, was branded. And she was speaking to Scott Adams, who is controversial, but also the Dilbert creator, really, really sharp guy, very, very contrarian views on things. I saw an interview where Nikki Klein defended everything. She defended and stood up for Keith, made sound arguments, and said things that you're kind of sitting there, and it was a true moment of cognitive dissonance, because you're kind of going like, if what she says is true, then it almost does, there are things in the main victim narrative to question, or maybe not, the main victim narrative, in the sense of this, it's not that he got arrested for anything, there may have not actually been anything that these victims claimed that was illegal. And why Keith Raniere is in trouble. there was evidence tampering, supposedly, that he got in trouble for. And apparently there's, as I keep following, Nikki Klein's alternative view, it seems that others in the court have agreed that it looks like there was evidential tampering. And she makes the case that none of what Keith Raniere was doing was actually, I know this is controversial to say, she makes the case that none of what he was doing was actually wrong. That these were choices by consenting adults. That it was totally fine and fun. Now, as I'm saying this to you, I'm not saying I necessarily agree with this. Because at the end of the day, this is a man in power at the top of the organization who looks like he is psychologically inside the heads of a lot of these women, saying mumbo jumbo and hypnotic doublespeak that doesn't really go anywhere. And it's simply, you know, if you were going to take advantage and make women like you, he is a master at doing it. You know, you can, it's almost sickening how someone like that isn't able to say, hey, look, maybe I should not get involved with the women involved with the women in my organization. I mean, it's probably not a good idea. It's not a great look, but I get Nikki Klein's point. That is saying, hey, but none of these things were actually illegal. You can't bust people for making decisions. I don't know. I don't know what the policies are. I don't know what Nixium's corporate policies are. So I guess from a technical sense, that is the alternative to the victim narrative. Does seem like there are women that were victims of this. There is something called the Dossier Project, which is some of the remaining women in the main inner circle of DOS that are defending their position and still think Keith should not be in jail. He should be released. This isn't right. They're calling for a mistrial. There's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, this is a battle that is not over. And the Vow Season 2 plays with that. And the Vow Season 2, what I like about playing with that is, I am a fan, and Bill Maher said this the other night on his show when he was talking about going against the liberal narrative with a lot of things, because, you know, he uses that all the time when he talks about, for instance, Islam, how there's a wokeness, but that's pro-women and whatnot. However, you can be Islamophobic and not address how they're oppressing women in that religion. And he's going, you can't have both. It's an interesting point. What's interesting about that point is that it's calling out that it can't all just be one more than the other. Or at least when you make an extreme statement about any side, any extremism, i.e., Keith Raniere is the sole person responsible for all the things that were bad in Nixium. Well, there are edges to things. You're not asking everybody that was involved. A documentary can have a bias. This, The Vow, which my guess is it's going to, because this is the obvious thing, still make Keith look bad, even though they're playing with this other side of the narrative thing. And it's the same thing that happened with that show, 13 Reasons Why, about the girl that commits suicide. Then they did a season two where they were like, well, what if she actually, what, these people didn't actually do anything? What if she wasn't as much of a victim as they put? It's the same kind of stuff. But I do really like that playing with the other side thing. It's why I like the show Lost, where you weren't sure who was good or evil, because I think it's great to actively scramble your brain. That's what Bill Maher said. This we are, when the mainstream media scrambles the narrative, or something or in real life happens that scrambles the mainstream media's narrative. See, that I'm sounding like a Fox commentator, but I think it's not one side or the other. We are going to constantly have things that challenge our existing belief systems, and to have people come forward from DOS that are still defending it and sound relatively, like, very smart, mature adult women who do not seem brainwashed. They're going, yeah, everybody thinks I'm the brainwashed victim. That's what the first person in The Vow season 2 says. This woman goes, yeah, everybody thinks I'm brainwashed. Everybody thinks I'm a brainwashed woman and I'm, you know, a slave to Keith still. It's clear she's not. I'm not sure what other editing tricks they're going to pull on this. And Nikki Klein is also in the second season of The Vow, and she's already publicly said she did not watch the first season, or at least finish the first season before she agreed to do the second one. And if she had, she wouldn't have been in it. But I think it's great to have the other side. I think it's amazing to play with people's expectations, to go against the narrative. We will have skeptics. We will have believers. I know some people still ask me all the time, do you believe your guests? Do you believe every guest? Are you more of a believer? I'm more of a believer than I used to be. But do I believe? It's still undecided. That's the exploration of this show. So if you want to have a fun time, watch season 1 of The Vow and join me for season 2 of The Vow on HBO. It is a loopy experience, to say the least. It's got everything in it that you'd possibly want. This guy Keith Raniere seems like such a con man, so that's why I'm also going, he's a con man. Can you be a con man but also be involved in some kind of sex ritual thing, but that is consenting, but at the same time it is an abuse of power because he's in power, but if all these women are going, yeah, but we're okay with him being in power because we're okay with it, I don't know. It's all very strange. It's very strange. One of the things I will also take away from it is the way he is talking to people, the way he has conversations with people. He talks slow and says things that kind of put people in a, what we call in hypnosis, a trans-derivational search, where they're looking for an answer for something in their unconscious. What if it's not your actions, but who your behavior reflects when you're committing to your actions? Who is that person? I don't even know what I just said there. But the point is, it sounds maybe profound, and yet it means absolutely nothing. Keith Raniere is a master at that, and I don't know how he got that skill. However, it is fascinating to, I suppose, model and learn from and see how broad, generalized statements can so easily get people to be part of a cult. Speaking of cults, and speaking of just manipulative tricks of the trade, I want to talk about someone, and I'm not going to say this person's name. It's a female. She's a female hypnotist, or NLP practitioner, or master of mind technology. Someone I've had on this show, and I want to go through a conversation I had with her, because this to me is a great example, of how somebody that touts themselves as a so-called expert is mostly relying on marketing, is not even aware, perhaps, of how manipulative they come across, is using cheapo tactics, and at the end of the day, can't even face their own self in the mirror. I hope this person gets the help she needs at some point, but this interaction I had with her, where she then proceeded to block me after the conversation concluded, it has very interesting dynamics that I think are good for people to understand, especially victims of emotional and verbal abuse, because, you know, you don't think you're going to be manipulated by someone when you do a show with them and then talk about potential business opportunities and try to get their work out there. But hey, it happened to me. It could happen to you too. Who knows? So yeah, you know, I'll put it this way. I do the show with this person and then we talked about working together. And because this person is steps ahead of me in terms of designing her own products and teaching seminars and all this kind of thing and wanted me to work with her on potentially doing that. And, you know, it was kind of like once in a while she would pull many different tactics. I mean, tactics including you know, telling me that we could start a podcast together and suggesting that she would be the Robin to my Howard, including even at one point suggesting that she had a crush on me and that she loved me and that I couldn't tell anybody about it. And if she were to come visit me, you know, we couldn't necessarily ever, you know, we wouldn't ever necessarily be able to tell anybody, but we could get hot and heavy, that kind of thing. Now, look, I don't even know what to make of that. I mean, obviously, there is a, when someone's that forward, there's usually something else going on, especially when you're mixing it with, I suppose business plans. Now here's what happened. Let me go through this interaction with you because this is the last conversation I had with this person. I found it really interesting. So this is March. This person starts a conversation that begins with, "I gave you advice a while back. You haven't used it. Must not value it." My response is, because immediately, this is comes out of nowhere. No context before this. A must not value it. There's been advice, but I've never got a clear intention from this person what they actually really want with me. Is it love? Is it business? Is it just using me to keep promoting their stuff? I mean, very weird. So that already is, you know, trying to put me, right? This is putting me in a contentious position. Must not value it. What a way to begin a conversation. Then I say, "What are you after here?" Her response, "Watching you rise to the top. You think I'm out to get your chips when I really don't care. I've had money. I've had good looks, lifestyles, etc. Just would like someone to actually rise who is young enough to do it." This person is maybe a year older than me. So, you know, I mean, this is already off the rocker. But okay, let's keep going. I say, "I mean, look, if we were to go back in our chat history, there's a lot of mixed messages." Her response, "No, there isn't. That's your presuppositions." That's her using NLP terms, by the way. Presuppositions. Presupposing something's there. That isn't. I mean, that's just a vague accusation. There's nothing really of merit in that. But let's keep going. Then I say, "Hell, you've told me you've been harboring a crush for me." She says, "Not my reality." I think that's connected to, that's your presuppositions, not my reality. Then I continue, "And then if you came to New York City, we could go out in secret." She writes, "Sure, why the hell not?" Then I go, "Haha, I'm like, ... what is this woman after here?" She writes, "What pickup artist doesn't have good times? Ah, you think women want something other than sex? Well, then they say, when they say, let's F, interesting. Who have you dated? You've got to work on your belief system. So yeah, let me fill that in. So what pickup artist doesn't have a good times? You think women want something other than sex when they say, hey, let's F. Interesting. Who have you dated? You've got to work on your belief system. Fascinating, because if you scroll up in the chat, there was a whole thing about crushes, harboring a crush, being into you, using that as a tactic. So, whatever. Okay. And then I immediately write back, you're good at these reframes. Me trying to use her logic against her, right? That's how you get someone that's in an LP or a hypnotist, when you spot the technique and use it back on them. I hate when people do it to me, but you can sometimes get them good. And then she goes, and who doesn't want to F and keep it to themselves? Interesting, interesting. If we F, I'll make sure to let them know your dick size. So there we go. So that's already just an extreme emotional manipulation by someone. You know, just trying to just hit a man, you know, right between the, yeah, I mean, that's it. That's immediate. Just, she's pulling stuff out of it. We've never had any exchange. There's been no implications. I've never bragged about anything. Like, this is totally coming out. I mean, this is Trumpian. It's Trumpian. This is Trump at that first debate with Biden. Fascinating. I just write, ha-ha. And then she goes, now, this is where, I mean, look, I don't even care about my genitalia here. This is even more fascinating. All the people, all the mediocre people you interview, just shit. She writes, I'll say that word. Because you know what? That would count you as shit. You wanted to be on my show. You wanted to keep doing it. I put out an episode with you. You're the one that wanted to keep, you wanted to produce a show with me. Interesting. I write, see, this is a great example of mixed messages. You're being sarcastic, but insulting me too. Very strange. What are you going for? What do you get out of me feeling bad about myself? I'm not actually feeling bad. I just want to know what she's getting out of it. She writes back, I'm not making you feel bad. You're choosing to feel bad. It's humor. Are you soft? Maybe think of it as a motivator to actually create a product. Some of us can handle humor. Some of us can't. Gran Torino scene. I write back, you're misreading me. So yeah, she's going meta. You know, she's going meta to the actual situation. You're choosing to feel bad. Great. Good strategy as a coach. Most of it, think of it as a motivator. So now she's twisting it into a motivation strategy. But yeah, in general, that is not, if you look at any personal development, if you look at the history of any of this stuff, that has never been a strong strategy for, you know, that not a strong strategy, a sustainable strategy to connect. It's just not. That is not how people connect long term to achieving their values. You know, shaming people. It's just not sustainable. It's not sustainable. Okay, so then let's get back. Fascinating already, right? So I go, you're misreading me. She goes, you're misreading me. And I go, luckily I've been in abusive relationships before, so I recognize your methods. I'm just confused by you is all. She writes, I have nothing of what's in it for me. I want you to create a product and see if the system I offer you works. Kind of like a test to your audience. A/B testing Ethereum coming up with. LOL, you think I'm abusive. You're funny. You don't know me. But feel free to think I'm abusive. And if I wanted to run patterns on you, you wouldn't know. I'm the type of person who is blunt. When you get it done, which you likely won't do, let me know. Digging in, insults, insults, insults. And I go, haha, this is ridiculous. And then, boom, blocked on social media. So, again, you know, nothing too significant here, but just the you're choosing to interpret it this way. This is about you. You can't handle this. This is, I think of it as a motivator. People do that all the time, right? Well, they hurt your feelings and then like you're going, well, you know what? Maybe I will. Someone did this to me recently. They made a comment about my weight, and I actually did take it to heart. And I was like, okay, well, no, I am gonna start being more physically active. And this person, instead of apologizing after me kind of being like, yeah, well, that wasn't the nicest thing to say in the world, it was like, well, at the very least, it motivated you. That is classic abusive behavior, and when somebody goes meta or they're in a therapeutic kind of this teacher guidance on a throne position, they can very easily take you and make it seem like you are twisting their words, i.e., hate to say it, but gaslighting. I know it's a word used a lot. And when you show them the reality, If they can't face looking in the mirror at their abuse, as my friend Jerome Calver, who I'm going to have on the podcast very soon, Jerome Calver, founder of the Present Time Alignment Method, he says this line all the time, and I'm going to give him absolute credit for this. He said, you know, when he was working as a chef in the kitchen, he used to say this to people, and if they were mean to him, if they were tough to him, if other people, other chefs were mean or whatnot, he would reply back to this. If I refuse to accept your abuse, who does it belong to? Sit in that one. Use it. I love you all. Thanks for listening to the show. And we have a very fun episode coming up to you next week. So looking forward to that. And we'll talk soon. Much love, loopers. And if you're in the woods this Halloween season and you happen to stumble upon Tony Robbins, just run. Much love, loopers.